Good evening. It's March 5th, 2016. We're in Gainesville, Florida at the Gainesville Retreat Center with Venerable Bhante Vimalaramsi. Tonight's talk will be on Majjhima Nikaya number 21, the Kakachupana Sutta, the simile of the saw.
I'm just going to give you some of the sutta. I'm not going to give it the whole thing tonight. The Buddha said, abandon what is unwholesome and develop yourselves in wholesome states. For this is how you will come to growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline. What does that mean? Abandon unwholesome states. I'm looking for an answer. It means practicing the six R. You're going to be, as soon as the Dhamma talk is over, you're going to be off retreat. And what's going to happen when you get home is your mind is not going to be as peaceful and calm as it is here. So what's going to happen is if you try to bring up equanimity or some of the higher states of mind, you're not going to be able to do that. So go back to the loving kindness and do the six directions with the loving kindness. And eventually your mind is going to get back into a deeper state like you're experiencing now, but it's just not going to happen right away. It's going to take some time. The thing that's real important for you to remember is that this is not just a meditation retreat practice. This is an all-the-time practice. I've had people complain to me, yeah, but I'm on a computer all day. That's my job. How can I be radiating loving kindness to all beings when I have to do the work? If it's work, you're doing the wrong job. If it's fun, then you're doing the right job. All you have to do is smile into it. Can you smile while you're typing? When you're walking from one place to another, what are you doing with your mind? Can you radiate loving kindness to all beings while you're walking? You get caught in a traffic jam. What are you doing with your mind? You start smiling. People around you will look at you smiling, and they will smile back. Turn it into a habit of smiling because it improves your mindfulness so much. And you'll see when that happy, uplifted mind starts to get pulled down into the mud, you'll be able to recognize it more easily. And then you use your six R's. Let it be. It's not you anyway. Why are you taking things personally? Why are you causing yourself so much suffering? Let go of your old habitual habits. One of the things that I notice with a lot of husbands and wife, one of them will say to the other, oh, you're always this way. Now, what's really happening when you say that? You're pigeonholing them. You're expecting them to act that way, even if you don't like the way they're acting. But you expect them to act that way because you are using an image of them that's developed over the years that is unwholesome. When you start practicing loving kindness, I told you what happens when people come together and they're fighting and they come to my kuti and they're fighting. I'm not going to get in the middle of your fight, but I'm going to start radiating loving kindness because I see both of those people are suffering. You don't have to fight with anyone else. You don't have to disagree with them. And this particular sutta really points this out. It says, there are these five courses of speech that others may use when they address you. Their speech may be timely or untimely, true or untrue, gentle or harsh, connected with good or with harm, spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. When others address you, their speech may be timely or untimely. When others address you, their speech may be true or untrue. When others address you, their speech may be gentle or harsh. When others address you, their speech may be connected with good or with harm. When others address you, their speech may be spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. Here you should train thus. Now this is your meditation for your daily activities. Our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare, with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. Now what's that really saying? It doesn't matter what somebody else says to you. That's their opinion. You don't have to take their dislike and their dissatisfaction and make it your own. You have a choice. You have a decision to make. Am I going to fight with this person or not? My friend in Indonesia, that's the translator for me, she married an American. And right before they got married, they've been married 6 years, 7 years now, right before they got married, the man's father pulled him aside. And he said, do you want a successful marriage? And he said, yes, of course. He said, okay. Whatever your wife says, she's right. They have never had an argument. Because it takes two to tango, it takes two to fight, too. But when there's no fight here, this fight goes away. And they tease each other about, she's always right. And she'll remind him every now and then, you know I'm right. And then they start laughing. And then they discuss whatever needs to be discussed without the emotional upset. So that in 7 years they've never had a fight. Does that sound right with relationships? And it really does work that way. I had one friend, he heard me say this in a talk and he said, but I want to be right some of the time. So on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, she can be right. On Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, I can be right. And on Sunday, we'll just ignore each other. But it doesn't matter what somebody else says. They can say things that are really hurtful. But you don't listen to them. You use them as your object of meditation right then, and you start radiating loving kindness to them. And their fight will disappear. So it's real important to remember that this is part of the meditation too. This is what the Buddha is telling us. The way you should train all the time. It doesn't matter what another person says. It really doesn't. What matters is how you respond to the other person. Another person comes up to you and they say something, and you use them as your object of meditation. You radiate loving kindness to them. You don't have to smile with them when they're mad, because that'll be misunderstood and they'll accuse you of not being serious. And that reminds me of another story. I had this one student that got very highly emotional sometimes. And she was really going through it, and she was really down and really angry, and she came to me and I said, "Well, why don't you smile?" "I can't smile right now." "Okay. Why don't you laugh?" "I can't laugh. This isn't funny." And that made me laugh. And because I laughed, she started laughing, and then she was back in balance. Remember this. This is how you practice all the time. You know, your minds are going to start to be more balanced with your daily activities. The things that used to get you upset, now because you've done this retreat, it's not going to be so bad anymore if you can remember that you need to practice every day. Practice for an hour. No less. And carry it with you. You're walking down the street. You're just thinking nonsense thoughts. Well, wish everybody happiness. Smile. And see what happens. And that's what this is talking about. Abandon unwholesome and develop wholesome. That will lead to your growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline. We shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with him, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train. So this is an all-the-time practice. Too many times I've done retreats where I got off retreat and I went into culture shock because I was starting to slow down mind, but things started happening real fast and I didn't know how to handle it. And it was hard. But with this practice, when you're practicing your loving kindness, use that person that you're talking to as the reminder to radiate loving kindness to them, and use them as the reminder when you walk away, why don't I just do this to everybody around? Do you want to affect the world in a positive way? If you do, you can't fake it. You have to radiate loving kindness. It's not something just to say. This is something to do. And it's real important that you remember as often as you can. Radiate loving kindness. Even in difficult situations, when somebody else is really angry with you, you don't have to get angry with them. You don't have to dislike them because they're being rough or nasty. You have to remember that you are in control of you. You don't have to take anybody else's moods and make them your own. What you have to do is radiate loving kindness. That's how you start affecting the world around you. And it's real interesting. Sometimes I'll walk into a Walmart that's about the only food store that we have around us. And I'll be thinking about something, this or that. I've got to go get this, and I got to go down that aisle, and all of this kind of stuff. And somebody will walk up to me, and they'll just smile as they're walking by. And it's like, oh, thanks. Good reminder. So it's real interesting that in all of the suttas, there's mention of loving kindness and practicing the loving kindness meditation about 100 times. Mindfulness of breathing, it's mentioned 8 times. What do you think the Buddha taught most? This is a question I used to ask a lot of people that were practicing straight vipassana. How many times do you see the word vipassana without the word serenity or jhana behind it? 6 times? How many times do you see the word jhana? Few thousand. What do you think the Buddha taught most? Don't hang on to what somebody else thinks is right. You have to see for yourself. When you're practicing loving kindness, the whole world starts to smile back with you. Your mind becomes more uplifted. You become more happy. You start laughing more. That's what the Buddha was trying to show us. Have an uplifted mind, a happy mind. And not take things personally. I don't like this. One time I was in Hawaii, I was a layman, and this man was starting to build a house, and I thought, well, I'll help him out. So every day I'd show up and help him build the house, and before long he started thinking he was my boss. And it made me mad. And I was thinking all kinds of nasty thoughts about this no good so-and-so. I'm just helping him, and his house is almost done, and he wouldn't have gotten near as far if I didn't help him. But he's acting like I'm a paid hand, and I'm not paid. And as I was walking up, I thought, you know, he really does think that he's my boss. And my mind went, oh, isn't that weird? He thinks he's my boss. And I laughed, and I watched what happened to my mind right after that. The anger disappeared. The emotional upset disappeared. And then I saw, well, this is just anger. Do I want to walk around with this? Not really. We'll let it go. And I was happy, and I wasn't thinking the same things over and over and over again about what a turkey this guy was. And that was a really an eye-opening experience. So you have to understand what you think and ponder on. That's the inclination of your mind. You think happy, smiling thoughts, your mind is going to tend towards happy, smiling thoughts. You think grumpy thoughts, your mind is going to tend towards grumpy. It's your choice. What are you going to do? You going to continue on and always act the same way when somebody comes up to you and they say something you don't like? Well, I'm going to take their anger and make it my anger. And then I'm going to start talking at the same time that they're talking, with anger. And you don't hear what they say, and they don't hear what you say, because you're talking at the same time. And then they walk away. What do you think about? What they said? What you said? What you should have said? I'm right, they're wrong. And then a little while later, just like you're on a tape deck, same thing comes up again. Why does it come up again? Who takes this stuff personally? Who is causing their own pain? You get in the car, you start driving, and you start thinking about, that no good so-and-so said this, and I said that, and I should have said this. Are you driving? That's scary. Because almost everybody does that. Run into something, bang into something. Why did that happen? Because you weren't driving. You weren't paying attention to what you were doing. You were caught in your aversion. Hatred can never be overcome by hatred. That's what you say every morning, right? Well, I want to change that. Aversion can never be overcome by aversion. Aversion can only be overcome with loving acceptance. And that's not Buddhist, that's just the way it is. And you see it in your own life. Somebody comes at you with anger, you take their anger, make it yours, throw it back at them. Now you're at war. And in relationships, it quite often makes relationships break up. Because I'm right and they're wrong. I like this, I don't like that. They do this, I don't like it. And I gripe about it. You're always this way. All of these kind of situations can be healed very easily. You should train thus, our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare, that other person that's angry, with a mind filled with loving kindness, without inner hate. We shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Starting with him, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That's how you should train yourself. It's not an easy practice, but it is a worthwhile practice. And if you really start being more careful with how other people affect you, what happens in your mind when it's negative? How much tightness is there in your head? Lots. And if you really don't like it, your face starts to change. One of the advantages of practicing loving kindness is that your face becomes very beautiful. You ever see anybody with an angry face? How beautiful are they? Their face gets red, their face gets ugly. They can even start to turn black in the face. What happens if you die at that moment? What kind of realm do you think you're going to be reborn in? So you want to practice this loving kindness as much as you possibly can during the day. If you see a person of the opposite sex and you start radiating loving kindness to them, that's fine, but don't look them in the eye when you're doing it. That's very much misunderstood. And then that's a problem. But you can radiate loving kindness to everybody around you and wish them happiness. So this particular sutta, I had a teacher friend in New York City. And he just started the meditation and he started reading the suttas and all of this kind of stuff. And he says, it's too bad that the Buddha only taught mindfulness of breathing. Why didn't he teach more about meditation? There's so much in this book about meditation, it's remarkable. And I started telling him, it's not about sitting. You need private time. You need quiet time. So you can watch your mind more closely. But while you're doing other things, can you smile and be happy while you're doing it? That's the practice. I used to go to the hospital when I was in Malaysia. I was going to the hospital almost every day, and I was visiting people that were really sick. They had cancer, they were getting close to death. And most people that have a family member that's very sick, they start feeling helpless and they start feeling sorry for the person that's very sick and for themselves, and they make themselves miserable. Whenever I would go see somebody that was getting close to death, when I was walking up to their room, I was reminding themselves that their pain is theirs. I can't take their pain away. And sometimes they really had intense pain, but I can't change that. So I started practicing compassion. Now, this is not just surface compassion. Oh, you got to be compassionate to all beings. This is not that. What I did was I reminded myself, their pain is theirs, but I can love them no matter what. So when I walk into a room and there's somebody that's really suffering and they have a lot of pain, I don't try to take their pain away. I don't feel sorry for them. I radiate loving kindness to them. And before long, their mind starts to come up to the level of my mind. And the other people, the other family members, they go into the room and they don't know what to do, so they adjust the pillow a little bit and adjust the blanket, and if they're in a place that they open a window or do whatever, and it's so painful to them and they feel so sorry that they can't stay in the room very long. But when I would come in, the person that would be sick, they would say, you know, this is like fresh air coming into the room whenever you come in. I said, yeah, of course. I'm not trying to control anything. I'm not trying to make you feel better, but I can wish you well. And as I stay there with them for a little while, their pain becomes less. And I get them to laugh. I say something that's completely off the wall sometimes. And as soon as they laugh, the pain kind of goes away. Now, I'm a sneaky monk. I get them to do this on purpose. Why? It's a proven fact that if you have dislike and tightness in your mind, it causes tightness in your brain, and there's a little goodie that's called the pineal gland, right in the middle of your brain. The pineal gland is a thing that controls endorphins. Endorphins are the painkiller for the body. When there's a lot of tightness, it stops the endorphins from going through the body, so the pain becomes much more intense. But when I get them to laugh, they relax a little bit more. And that lets the endorphins out into the body. The endorphins are 10 times stronger than morphine. I mean, it's really major. And they become more accepting of their situation. Some people, they had to go to have an operation. There was one man that had a a growth on his on his main carotid artery, and it was a very serious operation. So he asked if I would help. So the day before, or the night before he went into the hospital, I got him and his family together and started radiating loving kindness to him. And I gave them a talk on feeling helpless. You don't have to feel helpless when somebody else is suffering. You want to help? Radiate loving kindness to them. It's simple. But if you get caught up in, oh, you poor dear, I feel so sorry for you, well, you're going to make them more miserable. You're going to remind them that they're really in pain, and their pain is going to be big. But what I did was I told them, okay, let's radiate loving kindness to the doctor that's doing the operation. Let's radiate loving kindness to all the nurses that are going to be taking care of him. Let's radiate loving kindness to all the family members, because they're suffering. They're worried. He went in for his operation. That whole day I was radiating loving kindness to him and his doctor. And this operation was supposed to happen, it was supposed to be 6 hours. And it was 13 hours. And when he got done, and it was successful, when he got done, they put him on life support systems. So they just kept him knocked out for a day. And the day after that, the family called me up and they said, we're going to go see him now. Please, can you come? Well, yeah, of course I want to come. So I go see him, and he's in a ward that's bigger than this, and there's just little spaces, just beds. There's no divider in between at all. This is the way it is in Asia. So I pulled up a chair right beside him, and he was really bad off. He was coughing a lot. He was kind of fading in and out. And that's fine with me. I don't care. So I held his hand and I started radiating loving kindness. And about an hour and a half later, all of a sudden he's sitting up in bed, he's not coughing anymore, and he's talking to us. I saw him get stronger and stronger, and he was in the hospital for about 3 days. And then they let him go home. Now, he was a school teacher, so he really needed his voice. But this operation, he could barely speak out loud. So he might have had to be you can't teach anymore. But after a week or so, I suggested to him that he start doing some walking meditation so he could get his body built up again, and radiating loving kindness. I didn't care who he radiated loving kindness to. Just radiate loving kindness. And he did that for a couple of weeks, and I went to see him, and his voice came back. Now, the doctor told him that wouldn't happen. But now he's teaching again. Loving kindness is really remarkable. you get to see miracles happen. I see them a lot. I see all kinds of miracles happen. That was one. I mean, he was really in bad shape when I came in. And I'm not taking credit for any of this. All I did was radiate loving kindness to him. The loving kindness is the thing that healed him. Doesn't have anything to do with me. Now, in Malaysia, it's run by, it's a Muslim country. And Muslims don't generally like Buddhists. When we would walk on alms round, they'd try to run us over with their cars and things like that. They were really, and they would pretend that they were going to put some food in the bowl and then spit in the bowl. They were not very, very happy about being around Buddhists. But when I was in the hospital with this man, and I just kept radiating loving kindness, and then it got time to leave. The family wanted to go someplace else, take me back. I started walking, and one of the Muslim men that was in the hospital, "Come on over here. I want you to hold my hand." So, I don't care what religion they are. They're human being. They deserve to be loved. So that's what I did. And I wind up about a half an hour with him, and I said, "Well, the family really wants to go, so I have to leave." And then I started walking down the aisle, and another Muslim man, "Please come over, hold my hand for a little while." Now, this is a miracle in itself. But they felt the loving kindness. They felt that radiance. And they were peaceful. And they felt calm when I was holding their arm, their hand. Because I was very calm. You affect the world around you. If you want to do it in a positive way, start radiating loving kindness all the time. When you get up in the morning, you do your sitting meditation, now you got to go brush your teeth. You got to smile anyway. Put that smile in your heart. Radiate that to yourself. It really works. And you'll see remarkable things happen. Now, sometimes I would go to the hospital and the person was very near death. So I would say, they didn't have enough consciousness to really react. They were in a coma. Now, it's an interesting thing. When you settle your mind down, when you're with somebody with a coma, if you put your hand on their chest or on their head and quiet your mind down, they're there, and you'll be able to communicate with them. It's really amazing. Anything I can do to help you? Are you uncomfortable? Do you want to move? Do you need some water? They'll let you know. But one of the things that I did was I asked them to, in their mind, follow what I'm saying. And I gave them the five precepts. When you give somebody the five precepts, get them to follow and take the five precepts, when they're dying, their mind becomes very uplifted. And when they die, they'll be reborn in a very nice realm. At one time, right after I was in Hawaii, I left Hawaii and I came back to the mainland because I wanted to be around people that were dying. Isn't that odd? But I wanted to be with them to help them so they have an uplifted mind. Now, most of them were Christians. So I'd read the Bible to them. I don't care. I'm not attached to this kind of stuff. If they're comfortable with that, that's what I'm going to give them. And I found it very interesting that the precepts are in the Bible. So I'd get them to recite that in their mind, and their mind became very clear. And one thing I would do right before they died would be to share my merit with them. All the good acts I've ever done. Sometimes they would come out of a coma and say, thank you. It's amazing. And it's not me. It doesn't have anything to do with me. It's the loving kindness. When you focus on that, there's a lot of magical healing things that can occur. I don't look for anything to occur in particular. I don't care. So it's this practice that I've been showing you all week. There's method to my madness. And I want you to be able to take this with you and practice it so that your mind can be uplifted and happy all the time. Another thing that this says here, even if bandits were to sever you savagely limb by limb with a two-handed saw, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. That's what the Buddha said. So there's no situation that isn't improved with loving kindness. Here you should train thus, our minds will be unaffected and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. We shall abide pervading them with a mind imbued with loving kindness, and starting with them, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. If you keep this advice on the simile of the saw constantly in your mind, do you see any course of speech, trivial or gross, that you could not endure? What somebody else says, they can have their opinions, but that doesn't mean you have to take it personally and dislike it. Just let them be and radiate loving kindness to them. Then you'll be able to talk to them as a real human being, not as an emotional human being. Habitual tendencies get us in trouble. So you want to change your habitual tendency from unwholesome to wholesome. Okay. Did you have some questions for me? My. I'm going to have to keep my glasses on for this. Okay. You've heard the saying, if I had a dime or dollar for every time I heard this, what might be this question? Comment you. Well, I've heard that expression. And I'd like to have a nickel for every time I've said, you got a 6R. I don't understand. This question comment you hear most from students that would make your sangha rich. Be happy. Is it necessary to be a vegetarian to practice Buddhism? Actually not. You saw I ate meat. That doesn't have anything to do with it. An awful lot of vegetarians or people that practice vegetarianism actually shouldn't be vegetarians because their body needs to have some meat in it because of the omega 3, 6, and 9. I had a friend that he was a student of mine, and he practiced being a vegetarian, strict vegetarian, for 25 years. He was the sickliest person I've ever known. I mean, you look at him and his skin looked like it was paper. He really looked bad. And then it was here in Gainesville, he went to a Tibetan doctor, and he did all of the different, and came up with, you're not supposed to be a vegetarian. An awful lot of people talk about vegetarianism, and they might know a lot about it, but they don't practice it very well. You say, well, you should be eating some more of this or that. And they say, yeah, that's actually, you got to be, and this is how it's good for the body and all this. And you watch them eat a meal and it's a piece of potato. And that's all they eat? And I'm a vegetarian. Well, it really doesn't matter whether you're a vegetarian or not. Oh, but if you didn't buy meat for yourself, they would stop killing all these different beings. Well, that hasn't happened in the last 10,000 years. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Oh, but it's a being. It's an animal, and they have consciousness and all. Okay. When you go into the store and you buy a piece of meat, there's 5 things you have to understand about killing. In order to kill, it has to be a living being. When you go in and buy a piece of meat, is it alive? Not was it alive, is it alive? Do you have intention to kill? Well, no, you have intention to fill your stomach. Do you take a weapon and use that weapon and the being dies? That's the definition of killing. When you buy a piece of meat at the store, what are you actually buying? Energy to keep going. That's all food really is about. An awful lot of people don't like the idea of blood. But you know, vegetarians eat a lot of vegetables. How many other beings die because of it? Of your eating the vegetables. How many insects die? Just digging in the soil. How many insects die? The thing that the Buddha said about this, and I'll give you the story. It is this man, this monk became an arahat. And he saw that when he was walking, beings died. So he stood in one spot. And he saw when he was drinking water, beings died. So he didn't take any water. And he saw when he was breathing, beings died. And he started holding his breath. And the Buddha came around and said, "Monk, what are you doing?" And the monk told him. And the Buddha said, "Just because you have a body, 80 different kinds of beings die every day." So having aversion to killing, well, the best way to not kill is to do the practice that the Buddha taught, become an arahat, get off the wheel, and it's not going to happen again.
Bhante, could you follow up on the instances when meat is not permissible for guidelines?
Well, this is for monks. We don't eat lion. We don't eat bear. We don't eat horse. We don't eat elephant. We don't eat snakes. We don't eat dog. Why? If you eat snakes, the smell of the snake gets into your body and you tend to draw snakes to you. And in Asia, that's really not so good. They got a lot of snakes that'll... And you don't eat dog, because your body sends off an odor that the dogs will start attacking you. You don't eat horses or elephants or donkeys because they're they work for a living. I guess that's the best way you can say it. Oh, another thing you don't eat is bear.
No lobster.
Well, you know that it's you can. It depends. Okay. If a monk hears that a being is killed, or sees that a being is killed and the meat is going to be given to the monk, we can't eat that. Or if we suspect that the being is killed for us. The way they're doing lobster now, they're actually preparing the lobster and they don't necessarily kill with the monk in mind. But I have turned down meals because oysters. I can't eat an oyster. It's going to kill. That's too close for monks. But if it's already killed, I can eat the meat. And there's no wrongdoing. There's no problem with that. And one of the most popular things on the YouTube right now is one of my talks on not being a vegetarian. You can be a vegetarian if you want to. In Asia, very few people are true vegetarians. And it doesn't have anything to do with Buddhism. The Buddha ate meat. When we go out on an alms round, people get up really early in the morning to prepare food. And they come out and they give me some meat. What am I going to do? Tell them, I don't eat meat. You got to take it back. Well, that's like getting slapped in the face. They spend all this time, they got up just so they give me something. And I tell them, no, I'm not going to eat that. That's no good. Monks can't do that. So, in Asia, you don't get a whole lot of meat. But what one person would eat meat for a meal here, that's enough to feed five people in a family. They cut it up very small. And you need the oils in the meat because of health reasons. And like I said, I do know other people that have been vegetarians for a long time, and they're sickly. 20 or 25 years of not getting what your body needs, you don't have as much energy as you need. Your body gets extremely thin and not so healthy. A lot of the people that want to be vegetarians, I think they really need to take a class in how to eat a balanced meal. And tofu is really not good for your body. That has three different kinds of enzymes in it that are hard on your body. Unless the tofu is fermented. In Indonesia, they ferment a lot of their tofu, and it's actually very good. But you got to get those enzymes out of the tofu, or else you're going to get tofu milk. No, that's not good for your body. You want to drink something other than cow's milk? Fine. Almond milk? Great. You can make milk out of a lot of different kinds of things. But tofu, stay away from it. And I read research papers on this. You know, in the last, 20 years, maybe? There's a big thing about cholesterol, good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, my cholesterol's too high. Well, there's a guy that's been studying that for the last 12 years, and he says there's no such a thing as good cholesterol or bad cholesterol. It's just cholesterol, and your body produces it because it needs it, and it helps you think more clearly. And my cholesterol's too high. It's 225. It's supposed to be about 275. But it causes blood clots. No, it doesn't. Now, this is a guy that's been researching it. He's put papers in American Medical Journal, JAMA, yeah. And they won't accept any more papers from him. Why? Because that's run by the pharmaceuticals. And they have everybody convinced that you have to have low cholesterol. There's a guy that was on the radio that is, he's very healthy. He's 75 years old. He travels and gives talks on diet and this sort of thing. He was a veterinarian, and he worked at the St. Louis Zoo, and he gave autopsies to about 10,000 animals to see what they were feeding them, what organs were affected, and so they could have a better diet and that sort of thing. And he did about 3,000 autopsies on bodies. And he eats between 8 and 12 eggs a day. Oh, but that's high in cholesterol. I won't eat eggs. That's no good. Well, that's one of the perfect foods. It really is. And worrying about your cholesterol, you need the cholesterol. There was a guy that he wrote a book on how to overcome cancer. He wrote it as a teenager because his mother had liver cancer, and he wrote about how they healed it with food. And it's in the last I heard, there was 96 editions. That book became super popular. And he said that he has some people come to him with cholesterol as high as 600, and they're perfectly healthy. They don't have blood clots and this sort of thing. How do you get blood clots? Well, if you use antibiotics too much, it thins the walls of your large intestine. And the little beasties that are in your large intestines, they go through the wall and they go into your bloodstream. And then they eat through the blood vessels, and the body produces this little clot. It's like putting something on it so it stops it from leaking. So a lot of these things that are so popular right now, especially antibiotics, or not only antibiotics, but these psychotropic medicines, dangerous. Don't take them. Balance yourself out with the proper diet, and you'll start to have a more healthy mind. Oh, but I want to be a vegetarian. Fine. Be a vegetarian, but learn and eat the way that is recommended. A lot of people are gluten sensitive. Why? Because they're eating some GMO stuff and it doesn't agree. It makes them sick. But I have some friends that are very particular. They can't eat bread, and unless the bread comes from another country, then they can eat it and it's great. So you have to be more careful and use your head. If you want to be a vegetarian, fine, but do it properly. Get all the things you need for your body so you can stay healthy. Okay, and now I'll get off my soapbox. Optional question. I already have one, but number two. Okay. Well, this is about vegetarianism. I've already done that one. What is a tusker? A tusker is an elephant with tusks. It's real interesting because I have a very strong connection with Burmese. And every day of the week has an animal. So if you're born on this day, this is your animal. And I was born on a Wednesday. And at the time I was born, it makes me an elephant with tusks. And I keep on threatening that I want to get an elephant. I think it would be great. I don't know how we'd feed it, but I'd really think it would be fun.
So we have the Gainesville Sitting Group has a.
On behalf of the Gainesville Klim Sitting Group, thank you for coming to Gainesville and giving us the Buddha's teachings. In appreciation, we are presenting you with the limited edition of Sir Edwin Arnold's poem in praise of the life of the Buddha, The Light of Asia.
Oh.
This is one epic poem.
Wow. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Now
it's more heavy. Oh, I can give it to David to carry.
If you wish, to come up and I guess line up here, and we can offer our donor.